and welcome. You're listening to Diversity Matters, a podcast about raising awareness and education through thought-provoking discussion, opinions, experiences, and inspirational stories from the complex world of equity, diversity, and inclusion. Now, please welcome your host, Mike Seeley.
Welcome to Diversity Matters, the podcast where we celebrate the vibrant tapestry of voices, perspectives, and experiences that make our world richer. I'm your host, Mike Seeley, and today I have a remarkable guest joining me by the name of Jessica Couch. Jessica is a trailblazer in retail and retail tech, known for her cutting-edge strategies in technology development and application within the commerce sector. Her expertise spans fashion, beauty, and tech industries, where she has worked with top-tier clients including Nordstrom and Amazon. As a leading figure in fashion technology, she founded Looks AI, a pioneering peer-to-peer fashion shopping platform. Her contributions have been recognized in prestigious publications such as Forbes, The Business of Fashion, Women's Wear Daily, Sourcing Journal, Yahoo News, Essence, and Afrotech. In the academic world, she has played a vital role in shaping fashion tech curriculums through collaborations with Cornell University, Parsons School of Design, and other notable institutions. Jessica holds an impressive academic background with a master's degree from Cornell University, Bachelor of Science from North Carolina State College of Textiles, and a certificate in digital product management from the University of Virginia. Beyond her work, she contributes as a guest writer for WWD and holds a board position at Carnell Couch Foundation, with past roles including advisor for MIT's Kinetic Program and member of the North Carolina State College of Textiles Dean's Young Alumni Council. Jessica is also a celebrated speaker and writer, constantly pushing the boundaries of innovation in retail and technology. She has championed inclusivity and empowerment within the industry. Her passion for breaking down barriers and amplifying underrepresented voices has left an indelible mark. In this episode, we'll delve into Jessica's journey, her insights on fostering diversity, and how we can collectively create more equitable spaces. From the runway to the boardroom, Jessica Couch embodies the spirit of change, and I'm honored to have her share her wisdom with us. Jessica, welcome to the Diversity Matters podcast show.
Thank you for having me. Excited to chat with you today.
Excellent. Well, it's a real pleasure. Let's launch straight in. One of the things that I'm going to start off with is to ask you, what was it that was the spark or the trigger that got you interested in the fashion business?
Yeah, the thing that got me interested actually goes back to when I was very young. I had an aunt who was a seamstress. And being that I'm a taller person and athletic, my aunt made us custom clothing all the time. And so as I got older, I got to work with her and see how that works. And when I was in college, I worked in retail and I started noticing that people like myself who are tall or athletic or built differently were having a very hard time shopping. And so the lack of diversity for different body types and sizes, or seeing someone who looked more like me in the clothing, really got me to say, I wonder how I can solve this problem. Unfortunately, I'm the type of person when I see a problem, I want to solve it. And so given the skills that I had developed, having an aunt as a seamstress and having did my undergrad in fashion product development and knowing about sewing and grading, I was like, oh, I'll just jump into this industry and see how I can help.
And you got that degree at North Carolina State Wilson College of Textiles.
Yeah.
How did your experiences there begin to shape your journey going forward?
Absolutely. The great thing about the Wilson College of Textiles at NC State University is that we were one of the only institutions in the world that has all of the machinery. And so way back in the day, North Carolina, where I'm from, was a textile hub. So there were a lot of manufacturers and fabric makers and all of these different people, seamstress, and it had an ecosystem. And of course, with globalization, those things went overseas. But NC State actually is one of the few schools that has every machine that will take from a fiber. So you can go from a fiber to an actual garment. So it had cutters, it had, you know, sewing machines, it had the spinners. It had 3D knit machines a long time ago. And so in the basement, you were able to kind of walk through the supply chain and see it with your own eyes, see how it works, see how it could be helpful. And it gives you a totally different perspective when you're thinking about design. We also had a 3D body scanner at NC State that was awesome. And so we had a lot of companies that were in the area that would work with the students. And I think having a bird's eye view of how the industry actually works and what changes can happen and how you can shift materials in order to create better fit and how you can grade things properly and digitize it and how fast it was, it really allowed me to realize that tech was going to change fashion forever. And it was just about being the person that could bridge the gap.
You founded your company, Luxor and Finch. Can you share more about the inspiration behind starting the store and, of course, the impact it had on your overall perspective?
Absolutely. Luxor and Finch was my baby. It was my first baby, so I love her dearly. And I had took a trip to Egypt while I was in undergrad. And what amazed me about Egypt at pre-Arab Spring was that we had a lot of assumptions about why women wore hijabs and why women are wearing burqas and like how it was restricting to them. But going to Egypt and Dubai at that time taught me that it was actually quite empowering for women. And so I got to see a plethora of women who were what we consider modest, but just decked out, beautiful, and just very proud of this. And when I went to Dubai, I saw the women were fully covered, but they had jewels and they had bags and they had designers. So there was no limit of fashion. There was no oppression like we assume. And so Luxor and Finch, the concept comes from my time in Luxor, Egypt, but it was about the dichotomy of that women exist in the space. And I wanted to create a store that kind of took those opposing views. You can be, you know, sexy, but you can be modest. You can be a mom, but you can also be a rock star. You can be a sister, but you're also an advocate. There's so many different things that women have to be in this dichotomy of thought I wanted to bring into my store. So the Luxor side was the more edgy side. The Finch side was the girly side. And it was a beautiful experience to kind of translate that idea into garments. And so when I got back from Egypt, I designed my first collection and we used silks and we used lycra and we used leather and we used metals at the time. And people were like, well, why do you want to mix all of these fabrics? And I'm like, because this is the future. You have to be able to mix these different highs and lows and these different fabrics and these different qualities in order to create something that matches the demographic of who I'm trying to reach out to. Now, owning the store was very interesting because I went from kind of being a designer to then being, you become a buyer, a merchandiser, you become all of these things. And what it taught me, however, was that when I was putting items on people who looked exactly like my audience, it sold better and I had way less returns. When I didn't do that and I went with the typical model or someone who was aspirational, people didn't interact with it the same. And so there was this idea that personalization and parity and being able to shop based on a peer drove so many sales for me that I was like, wow. And then I took my time as a retail associate. And I remember what made me really great as a retail associate was not that I'm great at sales per se. It was really that I could eyeball somebody. I could quickly take understanding of what our available inventory was. And I could see by their current style and maybe their past purchases exactly what I know would sell for them. And so I did that so well in store and I translated that online. Now, some people would probably have stuck it out with the store because obviously it takes time to grow. I did that for 3 years, but it only made me more curious. I was like, is the problem that I'm seeing with like, you know, matching people to products by allowing them to see it on a peer and kind of explaining body types and talking a lot about size and shape, is this just something that works for my very small store, or is this going to be an industry-wide thing that could revolutionize fashion? And so being the privileged person I was at the time, you go from being a store owner, and I was like, I'm going to move to New York. My sister was at NYU. I was like, I'll go sleep on her couch. I took 2 internships working like 12 to 14 hours a day to figure out where would tech integrate, how would size and fit like make sense. And I remember I started working for Tracy Reese, and that's where I learned a lot. Tracy Reese herself, she's more like a pear shape and her clothing is actually for people with pear shapes. And so I was paying attention to their fit models. I was paying attention to how she chose to design. And I was like, wow, I wonder if she talked more about being a pear shape with this drive more product for her. But at the time, social commerce, so social media and commerce hadn't combined yet. And so I remember taking the idea to the PR team and saying like, hey, we should kind of launch social media and do this. And they were like appalled. They were like, we absolutely don't do that. We're not. So I was kind of like, okay, that was my first understanding that people don't like innovation, but like when you are innovative, you got to keep at it. And so that kind of helped me to shape that. Hey, I want to be in the intersection of fashion and technology so I can help solve these problems.
So you could actually, I mean, it sounds like what you were doing was really looking across the whole spectrum of fashion and figuring out where technology, because technology is moving quite fast, where it can play an important part in the industry. So, of course, one of the things that when you focused on the technology side, Looks AI is another business or company that you have founded. It's a technology piece, I understand. Just explain a little bit more about the concept behind that and how it actually works in your business.
I'd love to. So Looks AI was a culmination of everything that I had learned. So once I left interning with Tracy Reese, I went to Cornell and I studied fit technology innovation. And that was great because I got to understand really what do people want from their peers in order to increase conversions or to drive trust in the online process. And so Looks AI is a peer-to-peer shopping platform that allows you to shop based on your body type as well as your style. So we focus on pain points when you onboard. So you would onboard, you tell us your pain points, your height and weight, and we match you with your digital doppelganger. Now, this is important because what we learned is that the number one issue why people aren't converting online or while they are returning is fit. But we're not a fit tech platform per se. We're about building trust and community. And so when you log on, you'll be matched with somebody who is your same size and has your same style so that you can have a shopping experience based on them. Now, the more people that come on platform, the more you'll find these fashion leaders. So if you've ever watched YouTube and you have these girls that try on clothing, that's all they do. They just try it on. They tell you how it fits. That is the type of interactions that we want to see on our platform, is the people who love trying on clothing, who have all different types of diverse body shapes, and who can help you shop with confidence so that you don't have to wonder, how is this going to fit me? And also, like, what should I pair this with? And what I wanted to do with Looks is just observe the actual behaviors that drive conversions, right? Because there's a lot of tech that you can use. People have avatars, cool. People have these wardrobe mining things, great. But what really drives conversions with consumers in the digital and physical space is having someone that you trust kind of give you a thumbs up for it, and they can tell you how it's going to fit. And so being able to manage customer expectations was really important for Looks, because we all want to shop online, but it's hard to find new brands. It's hard to know what's going to fit you. It's a total turnoff to scroll through thousands of products to find something you like, to only find that they don't have your size. And you have no way to understand, like, what are these other sizes going to look like on me? And so we're solving that for the customer. And on the other side for the companies, because we're a B2B2C, what we're doing is giving them back the data to say, these are the actual sizes that kind of drive conversions for you in these areas. These are the people who are driving these conversions. These people are your walking ads now. Why waste time trying to bid on ads that aren't going to drive conversions or traffic to your site when you have people that have their own audience and they're interacting with this audience? And so we're kind of taking the social commerce and the creator economy and combining them so that everyone's happy on both sides. And we can finally gather the data for brands to get smarter. And it goes back to thinking about the entire supply chain, which NC State did a really good job of making us think like that. Like, if you could see every machine and every part of this process, how do we innovate and make it better? And then Cornell did a great job of saying, when you double down on understanding the data, what drives conversions and what people really want, how do you create an experience that is worthy of a person's time, but also gets them the results that they want? And so Looks kind of is like Luxor and Finch 10.0, because it's totally evolved, but we're hoping that it changed how people shop forever and provides a service that is valuable to them.
That's great. Now, is this technology that is being rolled out to retail companies who sell products online? How many, you know, which types of companies are actually using this technology? Because it does sound absolutely incredible in terms of being able to almost see how you would look with certain garments, you know, online, which I think is incredible.
Yes, great question. So the underlying driver of our platform is affiliate marketing. And so luckily, every retailer and brand, the majority of retailers and brands use affiliate marketing currently, whether they use a Roku or they use another system or they have their own affiliate. Everybody's using an affiliate program. So we tap into that affiliate program. So right now we have about 25 brands and retailers on platform because we're able to partner with Roku and other third-party affiliate marketing programs. And so a lot of brands have affiliate marketing, but they haven't tapped it in a way that is scalable like what we're trying to do. So you have these affiliate programs like to Know It, which is great, but they kind of only cater to a certain demographic and it lacks diversity, both in ethnicity and in body type, and they don't cater to men at all. And then you have brands that they haven't learned how to utilize affiliate marketing to drive more sales or to use that in the place of your ads. Because if you did have people driving more sales for you, you could decrease your ad budget, you could increase your marketing for your affiliate marketing, and you would drive more sales because our creators only get paid once they've sold a product for a brand. So you don't have to waste money. It's very like sustainable and economical. And so I'll tell you the challenges. Retailers have done what they've been doing so long in the same way, whether it works or not, whether it's profitable or not, getting them to shift into a new way of thinking by saying, hey, all you have to do is just get your current sales associates in stores to sign up for this and watch the sales that it drives. It's a little tricky because it's new. And of course, people don't actually go towards innovation, even though fashion is all about trend and what's new. That's only on the catwalk. When it comes to internally or retail, it's a different conversation. So it is a bit of education that we have to do to let retailers know that this doesn't cost you anything. This is as products move, people are rewarded, trust is built, new customers are collected. And all you have to do is allow your sales associates to use this on their phones. They're already on their phones anyway while they're on the floor. So why not give them a tool that's better? But that's pretty much how it works for the retailers.
Now, obviously, as a fashion consultant, why is it that a lot of these organizations are not looking or not being able to quickly see the future, basically the technology and what it can do for the business? Why do you think that is?
That's a great question. And I think it goes back to the lack of diversity of thought. So when a lot of companies, take Nordstrom for instance, as you move up in Nordstrom's, you have to have started on the sales floor. They don't do a ton of outside hiring. But when you have the mindset of starting from the sales floor and your job is to drive sales, 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 you may not have the diversity of experience that is needed to understand how technology can integrate or what it does or being able to see it. I've been very blessed to have a career that has allowed me to be an associate, a business owner, a product manager. I'm in tech. I have the fluidity of seeing kind of the entire supply chain and what could go on and what can go wrong. So, and I bring that with me as a consultant. I think that there is a huge lack of diversity of thought in fashion. Fashion wants to do things one way all the time, as it's always done, whether or not it's been sustainable, whether or not we've seen a decrease in returns or dead inventory. It's almost like a fear. And I think to combat that, there needs to be more education and skill development within these organizations. We can't be afraid of trying new things. But I think people get pigeonholed about diversity and thinking that is black and white, literally. Like we're only trying to do something black and white. It's about sizes, shapes, thoughts, experiences, the culmination of those things. And then having a way for people to bring these different data points together and create something new. And that's what we don't see. When people get hired, you get hired to do one job. Nobody wants to hear how innovative you are. It's been like, for me, it's been really difficult being an innovator and trying to ever get a job because people find that innovative thinking in the wrong industry is a threat. It's a threat to their job. It's a threat to what they're familiar with. And there's a ton of fear because there's not enough knowledge around it. And that's why I think diversity initiatives are extremely important. It's not just about saying like, okay, let's include these people because we have to. You have to include these different perspectives and data points in order to understand what modern consumers want, what a modern way of moving forward is, and to embrace change versus creating so much friction by not doing so.
Obviously, on the subjects of diversity and inclusion, you know, you've been a champion for diversity and inclusion within the industry. How do you envision a more inclusive fashion landscape. What step do you think can be taken to actually help people become more inclusive, help them to understand the key role that innovation can play, and the fact that, no, it's not necessarily taking your job away, but it's probably adding value to the work that you do?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I believe it's twofold. I think internally, the decision makers have to be educated on what is new when it comes to tech, what tech can do in a way that's not so sales related, but maybe just play and learn. I'm a huge advocate for play and learn, and like a way of learning where it's not so old school where you're sitting and being lectured, but maybe you're experiencing exactly what can be done with 3D technology, or what can be done with affiliate marketing, or how is the creator economy being shaped? And then I think on the consumer side, you've got to have a better understanding of the modern consumers, what they want, who they are, and how to immerse yourself in that. There's absolutely no way that you can build a brand now and you're not hearing the voice of the customer in everything that you do. You're not asking them questions. You're not spending time with them. And I get it. Like, I'm a former product manager, so that's what we do. But like, you have to treat everything like it's tech. You have to literally treat everything like it's tech. And you have to say, are we building something for the demand? Are we really building something that people want? And if so, who are these people? What are they doing? What are their habits? Like, we can't rely on old demographics and psychographics like, hey, this is a girl that likes to shop at the mall and do this. Those things are outdated. How do you talk to your customer and engage with them? Like, where are you building community around listening to them, giving their voice kind of like time to be heard, asking them questions? I think we're going to have to do that in fashion. And I do think that because we're in a consumer-centric economy, the idea that, you know, in fashion, the trend comes from the top down. You have these designers and these really cool people that are saying, this is what we feel like is it. That doesn't work anymore. You absolutely have to do it from the bottom up. You have to have your customers inform what should be next. What do you want and how can we serve you? So I think shifting fashion from kind of like the dictatorship of style into a service-based industry would not only help bring in more diversity, because once you see that your customer is diverse, you'll say, oh my God, we need representation of our customer in our business, in what we're doing, who can speak for them. But you'll also realize that, like, it's not hard. It's just a community. It's not difficult. It's just a community. So that's where I would say some solutions could be.
Now, one of the things that you just spoke about was the fact that, you know, you have this top-down approach traditionally, right, from designers who, particularly those designers who have a very strong influence, you know, in terms of what people wear. Do you think those well-known designers, are they actually listening to their consumers and adapting fashion and styles based on what consumers are actually asking for? Or are they still thinking, no, this is what I believe they need? Because you do have, I think, a lot of people who buy clothes based on, you know, the fashion designers.
Yeah.
You know, if they bring out a new style, then everybody kind of gravitates to that particular style and everybody's then wearing it, right? So I'm wondering, how much are these designers now changing how they think and listening more to the people who are buying their designs and their clothes?
I think that is a great question. And I think one of the key indicators to see if a designer is listening to their audience is their return rate and then their dead inventory amount. Mm-hmm. And I think both of those things kind of can show you, if you have high returns, something's off, right? Like, people aren't just returning your clothing because I know people are like, oh, well, you know, people kind of scam, like, I'm going to wear this once. Okay, but when you love something, you keep it. And like, if you are looking at your rate of returns, that is one indication of whether or not you are on par with your customer base and your reasons for returns, which a lot of brands are interested in knowing the reason. They just like, okay, we'll take the return back, whatever. We'll put it into a special bucket. The second indicator, I believe, is your dead inventory. If your warehouses aren't empty, if you're sitting on product, if you're just there and you're watching product and it's not moving, I can guarantee you that you are out of touch with your customer, because when a customer wants something, they buy it. That's it. And so I think that I get that Henry Ford once said that if I would have asked people what they wanted, they would have said they wanted a faster horse. So I think as a designer and design teams, you know, it is up to you to say, okay, it's my job to kind of translate what the gaps are into products that sell. Now, I'm not sure that's always being done because the amount of waste that we have is a pure indicator that supply and demand in fashion is in no way balanced out at all. The third indicator is a lot of brands aren't collecting data. Where would they collect it? Are they using natural language processing to kind of scan the comments? Are they asking for reviews in a way that helps them to understand what went wrong with the garment or what did they like about it? Are they putting their customers together in focus groups and saying, hey, for you and your body type and your style and your price point, you know, what do you like best about us? What are you interested in? No, because surveys are unsexy and people aren't interested in trying the other ways. They don't know that maybe you should set up a pop-up shop and just observe how people are moving through it. That's your first indicator of what people are attracted to and not. Maybe when people are buying your items, you ask them to give you a video and post, but tell us what you love about it. And then you can mine the information and say, hey, for everyone that buys this dress, everyone says they love the fit, or everyone says that they love the fabric. That's a good indicator that let's take that back upstream and let's continue to make this. I think that fashion is one of the most antiquated industries. It is so antiquated. All these departments are sometimes siloed and people have these ideas. They don't live amongst the common person, but it goes back to the fact that originally fashion wasn't for the common person. It was for the elites. It wasn't for everybody shopping now. And so I think that having, you know, asking brands to change that is interesting. I was paying attention to how the luxury houses are now doubling down on their small percentage of consumers who buy luxury. They don't want to kind of cater to everyone else. So they're like chucking up their prices and they're only creating experiences for this small group. And while, you know, I neither agree nor disagree with that because it's not my problem, I think they have an understanding of their customer base. And they're listening that maybe their customers are saying, if I can see this product on everybody, what's the point? So some people are listening for better or for worse, whether it's to exclude people or not, whatever. But I think the majority of brands, they don't have a way to implement some of these things that in a way that would be successful. I don't think so. Yeah.
Great. You know, as I've listened to a lot of your answers, for me, one of the things that's really coming through is like education, right? If we can educate. Now, I understand that you are writing curriculums and, you know, for colleges and helping to really kind of educate younger people who are wanting to get into this industry. Where do you find the energy to do that? And how did you get into, you know, helping to create curriculums? I think Cornell is one of them that you provide that service for.
Yes, I had a really great professor, Tasha Lewis at Cornell, and she asked me if I wanted to do an e-Cornell kind of curriculum about fit tech. And I was like, absolutely. I think because I spent so much time researching, asking questions, you want to share what you learn, because as a researcher or someone who's curious, the goal is to put this information together to solve problems. So you want to get it out there. And so when she offered me the opportunity to do so, I couldn't turn it down. And so we put together a really quick coursework on fit technology. And then from there, I also sit on the board of Misa Hilton's Fashion Academy. And what I love about what Misa is doing is she's teaching styling in a way that helps the younger generations understand their influence, their power in doing so, and how to kind of like shift the industry. And so when she asked me to develop their fashion tech curriculums, I'm like, I can't say no, because so much of the future will involve technology. And so I've developed curriculums for her, and I've also participated in a lot of educational programs with like Parsons and Women's Wear Daily. And I'm a writer and a speaker as well, because you know all this stuff and it's like, it's no good if I just know it. Like, I want to get it out. And so I think just being passionate about the space allows me to have time to help develop curriculums appropriately and to give out information. And I've gotten tapped recently to do some programs on like Gen AI and fashion and all of these different things. And my goal is to make it easy, make it simple, and make it stick so that people leave and go, oh, I let me tell my boss about this. I know how to kind of like reiterate it. So that's also my goal, is I want to see these changes implemented as quick as possible in the best way. And so it's really, you just got to do the work.
Right. And you also mentioned about the writing, because you write for a number of publications.
Yeah.
You know, again, where do you find the time to also contribute to these various fashion publications that are out there?
Yeah. And it's Women's Wear Daily gave me my first opportunity to talk strictly about body types and sizing. And it was just so great because you're sharing your research, you're sharing what you've learned, and you're also sharing your opinion. And I guess when people give you feedback about it and they say, hey, this helped my business or this changed my mind on this, it definitely invigorates you to do it more and more. And so being able to be featured in the business of fashion and in Sourcing Journal and people saying, hey, I want you to come write for us in Tech Packer and places that are really innovative, it's fun. And I think getting the feedback is encouraging, but also knowing that something that you're researching, writing, and putting out there is helping people definitely gives me a lot of good morale to go and get it done. And plus, I'm like, I'm a Gemini. I like to talk. So I'm like, when I can't talk, I write. When I can't write, I'm like doing videos or something or infographics so like people can learn.
That's great. You know, of course, the company I work for, we have an amazing fashion portfolio under the Magnet brand. I would actually love to see you speaking at some of those events and helping people to understand more about the technology and how it can enhance and improve, you know, their businesses. I think that, you know, the work that you're doing and the fact that you look at the complete supply chain, it's almost like you can see into the future, you know. So helping to kind of educate some of businesses that attend our shows, I think would be, you know, an incredible thing.
I would absolutely love that. And I would also love the opportunity to do that in a way using design thinking. I think that when people are having fun and learning is better than just lecturing. So, and I've been really privileged to do design thinking workshops at a lot of colleges. And even with like teaching students something that's really complicated, seeing how easy they get. And I'm like, oh, this should be nothing for an executive. We think we'll see. So I would love the opportunity to do that. It would be a pleasure.
Yeah, hopefully we can try and get you connected and standing on one of those stages fairly soon.
Absolutely.
One of the other things that I've done a little bit of research on you, by the way.
Okay.
So one of the things that I had read was that you're also a board member of the Carnell Kaut Foundation.
Yes.
My assumption is this is a family foundation.
It is.
Tell me a little bit more about the Carnell Kaut Foundation. What does it do and how does it kind of impact the communities?
Absolutely. So this is a good question. The Carnell Kaut Foundation is about learning unrestricted, without borders, and using new methods. So obviously, we are seeing how fast technology is integrating every industry. And so we wanted the opportunity to provide ways to upskill individuals, students, parents, adult learners, anybody who's saying, hey, I want to develop a new skill. And so we create programs and opportunities for educational institutions or certain like career verticals to upskill individuals who can also be included. And we think it's important because we want to see more diversity in STEM programs and tech. And as tech is innovating, without diverse people to give their opinions, to kind of be there on the forefront, we may be creating something that is excludes people instead of including them. And technology should be for everybody. It can't be something that we're afraid of. It can't be something that excludes based on your ethnicity or gender or your preferences. It has to be completely inclusive so that it continues to solve problems for everybody and not just certain groups. And so our foundation is all about kind of creating opportunities to upskill individuals, no matter their background, their ages, by the use of technology.
That's amazing.
Thank you.
That's fantastic. I got a couple more questions for you. So, of course, you know, this particular industry of fashion, it's, you know, there's always people coming in, new designers, etc. What advice would you give for an inspiring fashion entrepreneur, somebody who may want to be a designer coming into the business? How do they get into the business? What types of tips and advice would you give to someone like that?
I think that fashion is a wonderful business to be in. My advice would be, I would study the consumer wholeheartedly as much as possible before you ever make a garment. Because as a designer, as a creative, Your job is to take what exists and to make something beautiful that people want. They want to consume it. They want to buy it. But we also have a responsibility to not allow your products to end up in landfills, to not allow your products to contribute to waste, to not allow your products to contribute to unfair wages and conditions in factories. And so you've got to first know exactly what your consumer wants. Who are they? Where are they shopping? What are they buying? What are the gaps? What's in their closet? What's not? You need to work as a detective almost, because whatever product that you make, it needs to end up in someone's closet and it needs to stay there. We don't want it to end up in their closet and then in a trash can, then in a landfill, and then it goes to Haiti. We don't want that. Like, you've got to be very educated on understanding that you need to balance supply and demand, which means you need to have a really good understanding of what, try to predict what the demand will be for your products. Is there a need for it? Is it solving a problem? Sometimes when I talk to designers about what problem are you solving, they kind of are like, what? But it's like, you have to solve a problem with your clothing. You're competing with millions of other brands and products, Shein, Fashion Nova, luxury houses. What is going to be special about what you're making that makes people not only convert, but constantly come back? Do you want to be a part of the 20% of the closet that's worn 80% of the time? Or do you want to be a flash in the pan? I think that knowing your customer first is the number one thing you can do. And then you've got to understand your supply chain. Understand, do you want to make your products in America? And if so, is that something that your consumers want? Would they be willing to pay? How do you work that out? Do you want to make products that are about, you know, artisan, custom? Think about it. It's a ton of designers that I meet, and they've made a great product, for instance, and maybe a celebrity has it. And then you get into their supply chain and their business, and it's a total breakdown. They're not able to supply the product. They're not able to kind of get these things on shelves when they have a huge order because they haven't really done enough research and work. And so the second thing I would say is know the business. You've got to know the business, and you've got to know where you're going to need an influx of money. And when you're asking for money, most investors aren't interested in investing in a fashion brand. But they are interested in investing in smart supply chains. They are interested in investing in things that show a return. So you have to have someone on your team, or you have to be extremely business minded before you ever think about creating a product, because it's expensive. It is not just, I mean, samples can be up to $1,000 to be made. That's just for one sample, and it might not even be right. So if there is a way to incorporate technology, that would be my third thing. You might want to go the 3D design route, because it could be easier to communicate with the overseas manufacturer if you can do so in real time and make changes and change the language so that they understand you, versus spending that thousands of dollars to get back products that are wrong and you have to keep going back and forth. That's an outdated method. And so to sum it up, I would say know your customer, know the business, and then know what technology can make it easier, because you're going to need those things when you want to make money.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Now, one of the big challenges, I would say, in the fashion industry is around sustainability. With regards to sustainability, what things do you think be done different, could be done better to improve sustainability in the fashion industry? I often think about things like, you know, could you redesign and remake clothes with existing clothing? You know, as an example.
That's a great example. I think that when it comes to sustainability, I think the first thing people have to be aware of is the end use of their product. I think people make products and they spend a lot of time on getting it out, and they never think about, well, what happens after. So like things, if you're saying like, do you have programs where it's a buyback, or can you make something new out of the garment, or is the garment structured so well that it will last beyond these trends? I think that understanding the life cycle of your garments and having something prepared for the end of the garment life cycle is super important. Are you incentivizing people to bring it back so you can reuse the fabric? Are you incentivizing people to keep it longer or to pass it down as if it's an heirloom? Does it have that level of quality that you can do that? Just thinking about that can sometimes make things a lot better. And then I think that one of the best ways to be sustainable is to match people to product on a 1-to-1. Don't overproduce. That's problematic. I'd rather you underproduce and your products are in such high demand that it sells out and people keep it than you have so much dead inventory sitting around. And then understanding, like, things have to fit. These products have to fit a body. So you've got to manage the expectations of your customers so that they don't look at it and go, I'm not sure. That alone creates so much waste when customers are not sure how your products are going to fit, what it's going to feel like. You have to give them an experience that builds trust, not just because it's great for sales. It's great because you'll build a community of people who really want to buy your products and items. And so I think that we have to understand the economics of supply and demand. And when we understand how to balance supply and demand in fashion, we will see more sustainability, truly. We'll see less waste, less dead inventory, less returns, and we'll start seeing a shift. People will even value their clothing, wear it more, keep it because it's not falling apart. And it's not some trend product that's just good for a couple months. Like, I think that designers have to think and have people on their teams that are about economics and business and understanding what will the end of our products look like? Like, where will we collect our products again? And then can we still use those fabrics for other things? Even when choosing fabrics, you can't break down a fabric that has a synthetic and a natural fiber in it. Now, like, once you mix those two, there's nothing that really can be done. And there are companies that are seeking to like dissolve the synthetic fiber using that, but we haven't seen a ton of traction. So even down to being conscious of the fabric that you're choosing can make a big difference at the end of the life cycle.
Amazing. Tell me, what is next for Jessica Kaut? Like, you've done so many things. You're so inspiring with all the different things that you've done. What's your inspiration? What are you looking to achieve? What's your goal?
Man, sometimes I ask myself that. I've been in like an existential crisis. Like, what am I doing? My goal is to get looks launched with major retailers are all over. Give sales associates fair wages. I think we saw during COVID, like when people up the tipping amount, and people don't mind, it helped their workers and it helped the service industry to keep some of their workers. We didn't see that translate into fashion and retail at all. Like, you can't really tip your sales associates, but through affiliate marketing, I do believe that we can help to provide more wages for sales associates that will incentivize them to stay. Because if you're really good at selling clothing and kind of relating with people, you too deserve to have a career out of that can sustain you forever and you don't have to go somewhere else. And so my goal is to shift retail in a major way using looks, incentivize the sales associates, and then change how people shop so that we can see more sustainability, less dead inventory. And then this is a secret. I don't really tell people this. And sometimes I do all of this just because I want a custom wardrobe. That's it. Like, I'm 5'10", I'm very curvy, I'm athletic. I cannot buy off the rack successfully. And I like to wear more than sweatsuits, although, like, I'm not going to hold you. I do love athleisure. So my goal is I want to make clothing for people who have my body type. So that'll be like my passion project when all of this is over. And then I'm going to retire. And that's it. Like, I'm tired. So hopefully I'll get into another industry or something.
Amazing. Okay.
Thank you.
We've come up to the end of the show. It's been fantastic. Just listening to all these wonderful things that you're doing. Is there do you have any final comments? Anything else you'd like to add?
I would like to say thank you for the opportunity to discuss these topics, especially around diversity and inclusion and how it can include technology and body types and sizing and diversity of thought. Because I think we all need to be recognizing that we are shifting collectively and we have to ride that wave. We can't kind of go against it. And so I think, like, I hope that people in our industry will begin to open their minds and thoughts about what is possible and not just looking at what is, because we have to in order to see a better industry. So I would just end it with that.
Lovely. Well, thank you very much, Jessica.
Thank you.
It's been incredible speaking with you. And I wish you all the success with everything that you're doing going forward. And I'm pretty sure that you will be, you know, a pretty big name in this industry. People will know your name globally, I think, because you're doing incredible stuff. So once again, thank you very much for joining me on the show and all the very best for the future.
Thank you.
You're listening to Diversity Matters, the podcast. Remember to go ahead and hit the subscribe button.
Well, that was a very interesting and inspirational discussion with Jessica, taking us behind the scene of the fashion industry. Here are my takeaways. Jessica shared her journey in the fashion industry, from her early experiences with custom clothing to founding her own store, Luxor & Finch. She discussed the importance of diversity and personalization in fashion, and how technology can bridge the gap. She also explained her latest venture, Lux AI, a peer-to-peer shopping platform that matches users with their digital doppelgangers based on body type and style. Jessica also emphasized the need for education and a customer-centric approach in the fashion industry to drive innovation and inclusivity. She also spoke about the need for fashion brands to listen to their customers and adapt to their preferences, emphasizing the importance of understanding the consumer and creating products that solve their problems. She talked about the role of education in the fashion industry and how she is involved in developing curriculums and teaching younger generations, clearly demonstrating a passion for sharing knowledge and making a positive impact in the industry. She also discussed the importance of sustainability in fashion and suggested ways to improve sustainability, such as designing for longevity and balancing supply and demand. Jessica is proving to be an industry trailblazer and pioneer. Fashion is one of the world's largest consumer industries, estimated to be worth over $3 trillion by 2030. She is determined to revolutionize the industry with technology and data analytics that gets to the deep understanding and specific needs of the consumer. Thank you for listening.
Listening to this episode of Diversity Matters. If you liked what you heard, then be sure to hit like and subscribe. And we'll see you next time.